Hello and welcome to The Bond, the Christian podcast for purposeful and peaceful parenting. We want to understand children's hearts, reach parents' hearts, and see God with new eyes. Five young Christian moms started this podcast in September 2020 in Germany. We wish you God's blessings as you listen to our second episode about the immaturity both of children and adults. Carol's three-year-old son drove his mother to desperation. He was constantly getting into conflicts with his little brother and hitting him. He did not follow the rules and did not stop screaming when she sent him to his room for a timeout. His mood constantly changed and he couldn't control his emotions. It always seemed to be all about him with no regard for other family members. Why? Carol wanted to understand her child, and on top of that, she wanted to understand herself, her great anger when he didn't listen again. An anger that made her do and say things she regretted afterwards. Actually, in those moments, she felt like a small, unruly child herself. Despite all her efforts to keep her anger under control, it kept coming out of her. Why? In this episode, we would like to share with you some findings from brain research regarding the immaturity of the brain, and then explain what this means in practical terms for children under the age of 7, and unfortunately, for many immature adults as well. Developmental psychologist Gordon Neufeld has been studying child development for over 30 years, and in his life's work, he has synthesized the essence of all the findings of various disciplines, fields of research, and neuroscience on the subject of human maturation and the development of potential into one holistic approach. They are not all his own discoveries, but it is the essence of the knowledge of countless scientists. We will refer to him continuously throughout the podcast. You will see why we are so enthusiastic about his approach. So let us come to the subject of immaturity. At birth, the brain is the least developed part of the body. It takes an average of 5 to 7 years of healthy development for the different parts of the brain to establish communication with each other. We will present only a very simplified view of three parts of the child's brain: the emotional brain, also called the limbic system, the cognitive brain, which is responsible for thinking and knowledge, and the prefrontal cortex. The emotional right hemisphere reacts quickly to stimuli and helps us to respond within split seconds when we are in danger. It is also responsible for our emotions. You can call this part of the brain our heart, and it is the driving force for our lives. The major task of the emotions is to render the child mature. The cognitive left hemisphere is responsible for logical and analytical thinking. The right and left hemispheres of the brain have no connection after birth and must first create pathways from nerves to communicate with each other. This means that feelings are not connected to the mind at first. The child has a feeling but cannot name it, nor does it know how to deal with this feeling. The child's brain is completely immature during the first years of life and is easily overwhelmed by stress and strong feelings. It depends on external regulation, i.e., an adult person who helps the child to understand and process its feelings. As soon as the interconnectedness and communication between the two brain hemispheres is sufficiently developed and the bridge has been built, the next step comes into play around the 7th year of life, the integration of the prefrontal cortex. However, this integration can only take place under certain conditions and does not happen automatically. So, given the right conditions, a significant change takes place in the child's brain around age 7. Because the prefrontal cortex is responsible for the following abilities, among others: self-control, moral consciousness, change of perspective, empathy, concentration, and the ability to process conflicting thoughts and feelings. If the prefrontal cortex is integrated successfully, a balanced character and also the conscience can be developed. What does this mean for my child under 7 and for older children and adults who still act like children under 7? First of all, children cannot empathize with others. It sometimes seems as if our child is empathic. The toddler gives a toy to the baby when she cries, and 10 minutes later he hits the baby on the head with a toy car. Where has his empathy gone? Of course, small children also have feelings of love and care. That is why they often take care of others. But this is not empathy. For a little later, they may be frustrated or curious about the baby's reaction, not thinking that their hitting might hurt the baby. Immature children have no true empathy, because without the prefrontal cortex, children cannot look into situations from the perspective of others and develop empathy from that. They can only look out from their own perspective. Secondly, children are impulsive and cannot control themselves. When angry, they lash out without thinking about it. It takes self-control in order not to act on the impulses to hit, and the ability to think two contradictory things at the same time. I am angry and want to hit someone, but I love mommy and that is why I don't do it. Children do not have an inner but. They only feel one thing at a time and they are controlled by their strong impulses, emotions, and needs. They do not yet have a developed stress regulation, so if we put them under stress, and this is what we do, for example, by just saying no, the brain is completely overwhelmed with this and acts on impulse without being able to use the mind. The emotional brain blocks the other side of the brain, that is, thinking and reason. So, in the emotional outburst, the mind does not work. Children do not decide consciously to be violent. They are born with this human immature sense of justice to strike when something disturbs them. Thirdly, children can only focus on one thing at a time. They live in the singular mode. When they play, they play. They do not intentionally ignore the parents shouting from the other room. For the same reason, they focus on only one person at a time. When daddy comes home from work, daddy is cool and mommy plays second string, or mommy alone gets to put the child to bed. This does not mean that children really think the others are stupid or that they do not love them. Their brain just works that way in the beginning. It focuses on one thing in order to understand it completely and in depth. Fourthly, children are not consistent in keeping rules and promises. To comprehensively understand rules, a person must be able to think or feel two things at the same time. For example, I really want candy, but I'm not allowed any right now since I've just brushed my teeth. Or, I so much want to kick the ball, but I promised my parents I wouldn't do it inside the house anymore. For a while, the child is able to make an effort, but when two opposing strong impulses meet inside the immature brain, only one can actually be registered. There is no simultaneous processing of the two thoughts, which would lead to keeping the rule despite the desire for sweets. Children do not want to provoke or deliberately break the rules, even though we always take such rule breaking very personally and understand it as a provocation or disobedience. Fifthly, children cannot follow social rules by themselves and with inner conviction. For us parents, it is incredibly important that our child greets other people, says thank you for a gift, or apologizes when he or she hurts someone. This is expected from society, but a child does not yet have these impulses. They require maturity. Indeed, to be able to apologize genuinely, one must be able to put oneself in the other person's place and feel compassion and a guilty conscience. Behaviorist education focuses on the right behavior. The child is asked to apologize and thus confess his guilt. Often, harsh methods are necessary to accomplish this. However, without a sense of regret behind the apology, it is just a mere word, and a forced admission of guilt causes more ill will than true remorse. Has anyone ever apologized to you and you knew that it was not an honest apology? What is the value of such an apology that we demand from the child? Let's compare this. If you hurt your spouse, does it help if he humiliates you or tells you that you have to apologize, preferably in front of everyone else? Doesn't that push you further away and make you justify yourself instead of apologizing? Apologies always have to be voluntary, and immature children are not yet capable of that. Of course, this does not mean that we leave the hurt victim without apology, because our child is not mature enough to do so. For good relationships and for a clear conscience, confessions of guilt are of course necessary. But we, as mature parents, are responsible for the guilt of our children, as long as they cannot yet see and bear their guilt themselves. In attachment parenting, the parent of the child who has hurt remains loyal to his child, does not shame him, and apologizes to the hurt child in his place. He bridges his child's immaturity with his maturity. He maintains the bond with his child and is a role model for appropriate action. Children experience only one emotion at a time, and this with full force. Besides anger, they do not feel care. Besides fear, they do not feel security. Besides longing, they do not feel the urge to discover. Brain maturity is necessary for that, and this fact is very important to understand, because only the ability to mix emotions enable a balanced character. From mixed feelings come virtues like self-control, courage, gratitude, humility, wisdom, and so on. The pure feelings of immaturity also mean that a child cannot love during a punishment. If children are sent to their room alone or are given some other consequence, only the feeling evoked in them will be present. They will possibly feel pain, shame, anger, need for closeness or fear, and it will not be able to feel connected to the punishing parent. They are not able to think, "My parents let me rage or cry here alone because they love me and because I will surely learn something good from this." For example, if parents send their children away to think about what they did wrong, the alarm because of separation going off in the children's brain is too loud for them to think clearly and actually learn from the mistake in the long run. The brain will only focus on one thing that matters, restoring attachment, because this is the highest priority of the emotional brain. Therefore, it may appear that children come to their senses and promise behavioral improvement, but no maturity has been brought about here. And at the same time, the attachment has suffered. It is impossible for children to feel loved when other strong feelings are triggered by the punishment and emotional disconnection. But often, after a punishment, parents say, "I'm doing this because I love you and want the best for you." At some point, children store this definition of love and manifest the following belief. One may, and even must, sometimes hurt others out of love. And they also transfer this to their image of God. Of course, you cannot say children can never follow rules and have no empathy. In fragments, over time, more and more signs of maturity appear, but at times, they can disappear again. Therefore, these abilities should not be expected from the child by adults. As we have seen, our children are trapped in their immaturity. In the Bible, the condition of the people of Israel in Egypt is used as an image of slavery to sin. Israel was in captivity, and the condition of children can be described in much the same way. They are stuck in immaturity and cannot get out of it by their own efforts because they do not possess the abilities which are necessary to act maturely and altruistic. The law of agape love has not yet grown in their heart. Romans chapter 7 from verse 19 says, "For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Now if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me that does it. What a wretched man I am! Who will rescue me from this body that is subject to death? Thanks be to God who delivers me through Jesus Christ our Lord." The bond with Jesus is the answer to our captivity and sin, and also for our immaturity. Children naturally have their own will, which is selfish at first. God Himself gave us human beings our own will, so we should never aim at breaking the child's will. This is contrary to the character of God. The way should be to awaken the goodwill through attachment, to win the child's heart and lead it on a good path. Gordon Neufeld explains, "The inner urge to be good for one's parents is awakened by a strong bond alone. The love between child and parents creates the desire in the child's heart to voluntarily follow the parents and adopt their values." Children have both positive and negative impulses. They are neither absolutely evil nor completely good. They are immature and emotionally unstable. When anger is strong, children have the impulse to lash out at their own parents, but if the parents manage to counter anger with genuine understanding and empathy instead of reacting out of their own anger with punishment, then they remain bonded with their children. This bond is like a strong pole that attracts the child's positive impulses. This inner urge to be good will initially be impaired by immaturity, but it will grow like a mustard seed and eventually bear ripe fruit. The child will feel love for the parents even in the moments of anger and will be able to stop the negative impulses as a result. It will stop name-calling or hitting, not because it is afraid of punishment, but because the relationship is so strong that it does not want to hurt its parents. But this process takes years. Around the age of 7, the child gets to see a whole new dimension through the integration of the prefrontal cortex. It is the beginning of maturity. Even in puberty and young adulthood, one can still see significant changes and leaps in maturity in the human brain. These are the optimal time frames for maturation processes, but basically one can still continue to mature as an adult. The big question is just how does a person mature? First of all, we will give you two answers as to how maturity does not happen. First, a person does not necessarily become mature by getting older. The age of 7 for the beginning of maturity is valid only under the right conditions. Maturity does not happen inevitably, just as a seed does not automatically sprout over time, but depends on optimal conditions. Life experience or difficult circumstances also do not necessarily lead to maturity. They can have a positive, but also a negative, or no influence at all on the maturity process. Secondly, maturity cannot be trained. It does not happen through the transmission of knowledge or through demonstration. For generations, we have believed that we need to teach children mature behavior. We may believe that our children are mature when they behave maturely. Teaching them may be done through rewards and punishments, or more nicely put, through consequences, such as, "If you don't clean up, there will be no bedtime story," or, "If you hit your sister, you go to your room for time out." With these methods of education, we may achieve the desired behavior, but they do not bring about maturity. Instead, people are formed who act maturely on the outside but are still immature on the inside. Let's take our initial example with Carol. She knows what is right and good. She wants to be a good mother and raise her child with love and patience. Yet she can't handle stressful situations in a balanced way. All her knowledge, values, and good intentions are blocked out by other strong emotions. She gets so angry when her son disobeys that she can hardly control herself. And this happens because her prefrontal cortex has not matured enough to mix two opposite emotions. This is one of the main characteristics for immature adults. They cannot balance their feelings and therefore do not have true self-control. Also, Carol can't really put herself in her child's shoes. If she could, she would understand her son better and show him more empathy. However, she lacks the change in perspective needed to do so. Instead, she is self-centered and places higher expectations on her son than he can meet. Emotionally immature people are prone to depression and other mental illnesses. They can swing from feeling extremely positive to extremely negative. Their brain cannot create a healthy balance. The problem of immaturity also affects adult Christians. They appear nice and holy to the outside world. They do a lot of good deeds and serve the church, sacrifice their time, and strive for a healthy lifestyle. However, in their heart, they have great struggles, strong negative feelings, fears, compulsions, and no fulfilling free Christian life. They focus on themselves and their right behavior. They strive to act maturely, but they have little empathy toward those who live differently. They try to change others with their human, immature view of righteousness, with condemnation, coercion, and control. These are the characteristics of immature people. Perhaps you find yourself or other people around you in this description. If so, we want to encourage you. It is never too late to mature. Remember that Jesus does not look at us humans with a judgmental eye. No change in behavior will lead to true maturity, but a person. Human beings mature only in bond with Jesus. Through this bond, Jesus wants to lead us to emotional tranquility, and in this tranquility, man can mature and bear good fruit. The education of our children should also work in this order. Philippians 2:13 says that God wants to create the willing and the accomplishing in us. He wants us to mature from within through bonding. Jesus says, "He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit." If you have any questions, feel free to write to the bond at mail.de. That is thebond@mail.de. We will be delighted to help you. We are happy if you take the time to rate us on Apple Podcasts. See you next time.